world's greatest, yo. It's the world's greatest. I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country. I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high, hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest, and I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest.
Man, yes, sad day, man. Over the weekend, Muhammad Ali passed away, an icon. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene, myself, Wally, my boy, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. What's good, fellas?
I'm all right, man. It's a tough weekend for me.
It really
is. Very tough weekend.
Yeah, man. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, obviously, he had his condition and whatnot, but you just don't, you know, like the greats are passing away. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just trying to figure out what to say. I guess I have a lot of thoughts about Ali, his career and his life, but as far as his passing goes, I felt kind of numb. To me, he's not suffering anymore, to be quite honest with you.
I got you.
And in this day and age where so much focus is placed on football players and concussions, I think Ali really represented what boxing can do, the negative impact of it. And it's unfortunate how he lived, I want to say, the better part of the next half of his life. But nonetheless, it does not erase all that he was to the sports world and the world in general.
And we'll talk about Ali more in general, more in detail, pretty much probably at the 8:05 mark. But again, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Feel free to call in. The number is 240-478-3140. That's 240-478-3140. But other than Ali's passing, what else was going on? How fellas, you know, adapting to life?
I'm cool. Can't complain, man. Just enjoying it. It was a nice day today. So, you know, hopefully I get out after this and get some outside activity. Enjoy the nice summer weather.
Yeah, we need to play tennis, Ray Jeezy.
Yeah, we gotta get together. Sunday, when you asked me, I was going to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 2.
Was it good?
Yeah, pretty good. It's not just a kids movie. Anything with Megan Fox is good.
Are you serious? Yeah, you're working out.
Transformers. I can name some of her movies, but overall, good movie.
Yeah, and, other than, you know, Ali's passing and some stuff on tap for the show. Will, too, before I get into it, you know, the regular.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
When we talk about the NBA Finals, we're going to recap game one and two, because we're off for a couple of weeks. So we're going to talk about game one, game two. Golden State is up 2.
By off, you mean we had a technical difficulty.
Yeah, exactly. Practice last week. We had practice. Yeah, that was great practice. We had an excellent practice.
We sure did. Golden State is up 2-0 over the Cavs. We're going to preview game three. And also, finally, within the last 10 minutes of the show, we're going to talk about DeSean Jackson taking part, actually, in OTAs. But like I mentioned before, this show is a tribute to Muhammad Ali.
To the greatest ever. Yeah, the best ever.
The best ever, you know. Not Mayweather. We're talking about Muhammad Ali. Would you say he's the best in within all sports? The best athlete ever?
Greatest athlete of all time.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't go that far. There's a guy who, Jerry Rice, was Jesus in cleats. To me personally, you can't dispute who the greatest football player ever was or is. Uh-huh. It's Jerry Rice.
Football player? Some people say, man,
I like Randy Moss better.
I like Barry Sanders.
Man. I mean, this is a discussion we can have during the summer sometime.
Yeah, we definitely could. But anyway, I have a clip of, you know, Ali when he said he shook up the world when he beat Sonny Liston. So take a listen.
Hold it. He's yelling behind us.
Let me ask you this now. You told me when you visited in Los Angeles, you could do it in 8. Well, you thought Sonny and figured Sonny was great. You did it in 6 or 7. You did it in 7.
I had him going in 8. I was getting ready to take him in the 8th, as you could see. But the man stopped it just to keep from making me look so great.
Right.
I see. Now, give us that poetry on number 7. He wanted to go to heaven,
so I took him in seven.
You took him in seven.
I am the king of the world.
Hold it. You're not that pretty.
I'm a bad man. I shook up the world.
Wait a minute.
You must listen to me.
Now listen.
I am the devil.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I must tell you this.
I can't be beat.
Joe, hold it. Yes, we're in the chair, but I don't think so.
All right, Cash.
Thank you.
I'm great.
Thank you, Cash. Let's play the heavyweight champion. Let's get our champion.
Yeah, you heard Muhammad had so much swag back then. I mean, so much swag.
Black
so much
excellence swag. At his best.
It really is, man. Knocking out Sonny Liston, becoming the world champion. Back then, and from what I read, because I didn't see Sonny Liston box, obviously. I'm 35. I heard Sonny Liston was unbeatable back then. People thought he was unbeatable. And I'm like, here you go, Ali, Cassius Clay at the time. Knocks out Sonny Liston, becomes the world champion. And, you know, that started off history, to be honest with you. And it's just you don't see athletes like Muhammad Ali often, a guy who brags about it and backs it up like he does it, or like he did it, excuse me.
When I think athletes similar who dominate the way he dominated, Usain Bolt comes to mind, somebody we've seen who backs it up, who has a lot of swag, who talks a lot of trash, obviously Floyd Mayweather. But when I think global icons, you think, especially from our era, we think MJ, Kobe, Tiger, cultural icons. We think people like Allen Iverson, who, you know, influenced generations, who no matter where you go around the globe, they're popular. But Ali, to me, was the first. And I believe he set a precedent and a stance that people, you know, try to mimic even until today. So definitely an icon beyond just, again, the sports world.
I think a difference between when you hear Muhammad Ali speak about his greatness and you hear a lot of people, a lot of athletes or people in general, it sounds genuine. He truly believed that he was the greatest. He truly, not only did he believe it, but he was willing to say it and he would go out and show you. I think a lot of people today is hyperbole. You know, they talk just because they're caught up in the moment, mm-hmm. caught up in their emotions. Muhammad Ali, he really believed it. He really went out there and showed it. He really lived his life by that mantra. So rest in peace to Muhammad Ali, the greatest ever. Black excellence at his best, and they'll, to me personally, I don't think there'll ever be another person like him.
I agree, and I think people today do things for marketing reasons.
Yeah,
they want to make more money. Adrian Broner, in other sports, Chad Johnson, Richard Sherman, guys, they want to be seen,
uh-huh.
increase their marketability. But back then, it wasn't the same amount of revenue for uh-huh. fights that there is now. Can you imagine how much money he would have made if he was fighting in an era like today, totally. Where Mayweather's making nearly $1 billion, it seems like?
And yeah, and I agree with you. And to what Will T was saying, the one thing I feel like hearing Muhammad Ali speaking and you know, from the clips and whatnot, it just felt like it was genuine. He really believed he was the best. He wasn't trying to gas himself in terms of making more money. Though I feel like he was a promoter in his own right, you know, for his own fights. But I felt like he really believed what he was speaking. Like, you know, when he beat Foreman, he really believed he was going to beat Foreman. You know, Joe Frazier. It was just that you can feel it when he said it. And it wasn't like, oh, he's just saying things just to, you know, just to get a rise out of people or just to get play on various media outlets. It was to say, you know what, I'm the best dude on the planet and nobody can see me. And I felt that was genuine.
Yeah, Cam Newton take notes. You know, because when Ali lost, he definitely was humble and he continued to talk same way. Never changed. Even in defeat.
So what does Ali represent to you?
To me, he embodied. Well, so let me go back. During the time when Muhammad Ali was brash, was cocky, was very brash, cocky and I'm not gonna say cocky, but confident. He did those things during the time when African Americans, when we were told that we weren't anything. We wouldn't amount to anything. When society looked at us as we were beneath, we were an inferior species. So to me, Muhammad Ali, he provided confidence. He showed African Americans to what it meant to truly be free by not just his actions, but by his words. And even though his words, turned some people off, and some of his actions, his confidence turned a lot of people off. To me, he symbolized something, black excellence, strength. He's someone that I wanted to emulate, someone that I looked up to. I don't look up to a lot of people, but Muhammad Ali is definitely one of the people that I looked up to and held him in a very high standard by the way he carried himself, not only in the ring but also outside of the ring, speaking for social injustice and being a great philanthropist and humanitarian.
What Muhammad Ali represents to me, and I'm just going to use in terms of the sports world and just something that, you know, growing up playing basketball, just the art of talking trash, man. Trying to get into somebody's head and let them be more concerned about what you're saying rather than the actual, you know, the art form of whatever you do in terms of his playing basketball, football, whatever. Just getting into your head and knowing that, you know what, you're more worried about what I have to say rather than my skill set. You've already lost right there. And it just the psychology of that, of that being better than beating your competition without being physically active at doing it. So when I look at Muhammad Ali, I look at a guy that just was ahead of his time. A guy who, when we saw people like Reggie Miller or Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, for folks talking trash to do what they, you know, just to get the leg up on their competition, Muhammad Ali was doing it easy and doing it better, and no one can ever match what he can do, what he did back then, period.
Yeah, that's how I beat you in horse a lot of times. I would talk you out of...
You sure did. I won't
talk
lie.
Talk you out of your game.
Yeah, which was so frustrating. It really was. Now, Ray was Muhammad Ali of horse, definitely.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? He would say... What's that quote when you had that little kid?
He called me?
Yeah, he said he called me or the little...
No, because you called me saying, hey, you want to play a horse tonight, you know, while we at the gym? I said, yeah, that's fine. Because he had like a rivalry thing. This is a horse now, bro. It's not one-on-one. It's not around the world. Whatever we grew up playing, he wanted to play me in horse. I was like, all right, bet. So I basically told everybody in the gym, hey, he called me to play and I'm winning, you know. That's all it was.
Dude was hitting half-court shots. Like, he called me. He had a little kid, like... You know, he's a little kid co-signing it.
I'm an icon. I'm a gymnasium icon.
Yeah, I can't believe you had this little kid really hyping the whole thing up, too. Like, this little kid was like being a – he was a fan of Ray. Ray could have gave this kid an autograph and you would have been touched.
I have a lot of fans.
I'm not saying all that. All right. Will there ever be another athlete?
On Twitter.
Oh, my. I know. You are 100. Oh. Will there ever be another athlete like Muhammad Ali?
Go deeper with that question. What do you mean another athlete?
That's a good question. What
do you mean, would there be another athlete that
embodies
takes a stand?
Everything. That takes
well,
a stand
no, no, like because that. I think people are too concerned about their brand and the dollars that's behind it for most athletes to take a stand against social issues or social injustices. Some of them do it when it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a hot topic that everyone is kind of that's building steam and everyone's lending their voice to, then yeah, they'll do it. But for an athlete to come out today and take a stand that isn't popular for something that they truly believe in, and not only do that, but they're willing to sacrifice some of their potential earning. You got to remember, Muhammad Ali, when he didn't go into the draft, he was out of the ring for three and a half years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that any of today's athletes would give up any? I know for sure,
right,
but I'm just posing the question. Do you think any of today's athletes would give up 3 years of their earnings just because they believe in something so strong?
No, and I think it's evidenced by various issues that arise today, such as the Clippers. It's almost an all-black roster, and they still go out and play for Donald Sterling, in spite of ways. And they turn their uniforms inside out or something stupid. what is that supposed to
mean? That's true. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
You know, because at the end of the day, this is who's paying them. And I get it. Don't get me wrong, because any of us, we're going to have to think about our income if we're working for an employer who we don't necessarily agree with. But again, you're on that stage, you're making that amount of money. Is it really going to hurt you that much? Muhammad Ali, you know, just represented something and had the courage. He represented something different was what I was going to say, but he had the courage that many athletes and many people don't even have.
No, yeah, I totally agree with everything. To me, Muhammad Ali, there won't be another athlete like Muhammad Ali because again, like Will T said, and Ray said as well, people ain't going to take that. They're not going to sacrifice what, you know, the dollars like Muhammad Ali did. Like Muhammad Ali lost 3 years of his prime, his boxing prime, because of a cause. I don't think LeBron James is doing that. I put out names. I don't think LeBron James is doing that. I don't think you mentioned the Clippers. I don't think anybody on the Clippers roster was going to do that for Donald Sterling. And that was a playoff. They were scared because they had a playoff push. So I don't think any there's you're not going to find an athlete to do something like that. Obviously, we saw a lot of athletes. I was happy they did it when Trayvon Martin was killed. You saw a lot of athletes stand up for Trayvon Martin. But it goes to Will's point. That's the easy thing to do, though, in the grand scheme of things. You can protest with your rocking hoodies and whatnot. That's the easy thing to do. But for the guy to sacrifice his own his career, and he did that. He didn't know the outcome. He didn't know he'd be back in boxing.
No, he didn't. For someone to take the contrarian point of view and be so strong in their conviction, and stand put with it in the face of, losing their freedom by, going to jail, losing their earning potential, takes a man a strong conviction. That's why I said, I don't really look up to a lot of people, but Muhammad Ali, what he stood for, he's one of the people that I definitely looked up to growing up.
I'm about saying all that. Do you think he deserves his own holiday?
No, I'm not going to. Holiday is something that's reserved for people that, don't get me wrong, he made a difference, right? Mm-hmm. His stand, he made a difference. But, their stand, they had to impact humanity, a widespread. Their stand had to impact everyone, for it to be a holiday. On his birthday or on a day he passes, can we, on his birthday, can we celebrate his birthday? Absolutely, I think we should. I'm still trying to figure out a way Friday to get down to his funeral.
Yeah, I would love to do that if I was a boss like that. If I had the ends to make that happen. But I actually believe that he should have his own holiday. I think he's been very impactful to a lot of people, all races, to be honest with you. When you hear the outcry of his passing, it's amazing. Again, here's the guy who sacrificed his career for the betterment of a people, just because of a cause. I don't think you get a lot of athletes who do that. And I think, even for the African American people, I think Ali has done so much for us as people, just to give us instill confidence and show us that we can do anything we want to achieve, and we don't have to back down for it. I think he deserves it, to be honest with you.
Let me ask you all a question. Do you guys think he's the most beloved or adored athlete of all time?
No.
Who do you think?
I think it's several ahead of him. Jerry West comes to mind, who was on the logo of the NBA. Babe Ruth is definitely, in my mind, a bit more celebrated than he is. Mickey Mantle, another one that comes to mind. Trying to think of others.
That's interesting.
I can't think of necessarily.
I'm not going to say adore. Let me rephrase that. The most impactful athlete of all time.
I think he's the most celebrated and the most impactful. Just to me, I think it goes back. Obviously, we're all black, right? So obviously, we're going to look at Muhammad. I know, right? We're going to look at Muhammad Ali and like, oh, Muhammad Ali, he's all time great. But you have your white counterparts who feel the same way. Jim Lampley was in tears giving a dedication to Muhammad Ali, bawled out crying. I didn't see that type of, to be honest with you, other than in a baseball realm, I didn't see that many people, cry over, Mickey Mantle and whatnot. In terms of Muhammad Ali, you have people from all facets of, basketball, football, baseball, even folks who don't even play sports, politics, chiming in about Muhammad Ali and what he meant for them as an athlete and as a figure.
Yeah, as you rephrase the question, I agree. Most impactful, no question.
Yeah.
Because he impacted so many different realms of life.
Yeah, impactful, yeah. I'm not going to say he's the most celebrated or adored. No, I don't think so.
So who do you think is more, more celebrated than him?
I'll say this. The reason why I say he isn't the most celebrated, because you have to remember at a point in time, when he was Cassius Clay, yes, he was celebrated.
Yeah.
When he became Muhammad Ali, not so much. Mm-hmm. There was a long period of time where people, when he came back to the ring, he was booed.
Yeah.
Not only was he booed, he was vilified by a large majority of people who thought that it was his civic responsibility and duty to go into the draft and go and fight in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but he was backed by the Nation of Islam. And during that time, and it still may be true, the teachings were that the oppressor or the white man was the devil, which was a radical ideology.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not going to say he's the most adored. I think and it's sad, it's really sad to say this, but once Muhammad Ali had Parkinson's, then he became adored.
I agree to that.
When he was Cassius Clay, when he was Muhammad Ali,
I kind of agree with that.
In the 60s, no, he wasn't as adored, but he became adored once he was afflicted with Parkinson's disease. Once he was kind of trapped in that, you know, trapped within himself, and he couldn't speak or he couldn't function in a way that we were used to him functioning.
All right, well, we got to do a little NBA Finals recap. Question, are the Warriors that good, or is Cleveland playing that poorly? We'll discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Saying.
Thanks.
You did?
Deuces.
When nothing seems to help, I go and look at a stonecutter, hammering away at his rock, perhaps 100 times, without so much as a crack showing in it. Yet at the 101st blow, it will split in two. And I know it's not that blow that did it, but all those that came before.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. This is Ray, Wally, and Will. Call us 240-478-3140 if you have any questions or comments. We're also on Twitter. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. No S after sports. And you can also listen to us on the Sports Grid Podcast every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just visit blogtalkradio.com/WC Still a Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Still a Fan.
That's what's up, man. Thank you, Ray G's, for the excellent read, man. You the man. You got the juice now. Cavs are down to the Golden State Warriors 2-0. Warriors, game one, the bench took over. With Livingston had about 20 points. Game two, Draymond Green did his darn thing, had 28 points. I guess I want to pick up the question. What are your thoughts on the first two games so far?
My thoughts are... go ahead, Ray. I apologize.
I wasn't going to say anything yet, but I'm just looking at the statistics. And the Cleveland bench has been most shocking for me. And I'm going to pinpoint one person in particular right off the jump. I'll give further analysis later. But for now, Matthew Dellavedova. In the first game, 1-for-3 from the field, okay, equal 2 points. Game two, shot even worse with 2-for-9 from the field, 1-for-2 from three, a total of 7 points. You're the backup point guard. Someone who's supposed to bring energy off the bench. Somebody who did that, in my opinion, last season in the playoffs when Kyrie was down. He played a lot more, played a bigger role. I wonder what his problem is, especially due to the fact in game two he didn't have to face Steph, who was in foul trouble.
I know in game one, I remember in the third quarter. What the? Call me off guard, excuse me. In game two, excuse me, game one, you had... I didn't know where that came from. In game one, Matthew Dellavedova in the third quarter, he didn't, to me, he started a run for the Golden State Warriors. I believe that he did. He started a run.
Exactly my point.
It was the Cavs had a lead in the third quarter. They went up to a 3-point lead in the third quarter. And Dellavedova started turning the ball over, couldn't make an open shot because they would double off of him, and so leaving him wide open.
Exactly.
And he couldn't make a shot. He was a threat out there. I'm going to say this again. What happened to Mo Williams?
Aren't there better backup point guards in the league in general, in the D League somewhere than this guy? I don't understand why he is where he is. I just don't get it. Quinn Cook from Duke competed with him for a position on the roster in preseason and was cut, even though he outplayed Dellavedova one-on-one in head-to-head matchups during practices and scrimmages. It's amazing. I just feel like he's a liability in many cases. Although, you know, last year he brought energy, he brought defense, he brought a toughness with him. This year, he's not bringing those things that he specializes at Why is he out there? Mo Williams, yeah, he's sitting right there. This is Tyronn Lue. By the way, there's so much pressure on LeBron James because the media has just deep-fried him. They have been identifying that he's the one that has, you know, influenced all the moves, roster moves, coaching moves, and they feel like this is all on him.
I'll say this. The most shocking thing for me is through six games in a – no – yeah, through eight games in the finals total, Steph Curry hasn't played that well. And Golden State has still been able to, A, win a championship last year and go up 2-0 this year. Second thing, Kyrie Irving, we're now, I think the world is really seeing just how much of a defensive liability he is. During the regular season, Tyronn Lue could always hide Kyrie Irving by putting him on the worst offensive guard that was out there. Now, when you have Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, you have two very great shooting guards, guards who can shoot it from anywhere and play, well, defensively, there's nowhere for you to hide Kyrie Irving. That's the second thing. And number three, to me it seems a little awkward that, you know, LeBron has his two all-stars. And at this point last year, they were up. They were tied 1-1. Uh-huh. And going into the third game, they were taking a 2-1 lead. That just shows, to me, that speaks of that you don't have the right combination, the right fit or gel of players. And I wouldn't be surprised if come this offseason, one of those, we definitely know it's not going to be LeBron, but Kyrie or Kevin Love is out of Cleveland.
You really think that Kyrie Irving has been exposed, though? Because yeah, you just said that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson hasn't played well either, for that matter, but neither one. So, or they haven't played to their potential. So where is he really being exposed? I'm just trying to...
No, he's being exposed because he's having to work defensively, whereas during the regular season, during the playoffs, you could put him on the I'm not going to say the worst, but...
You're the weakest. You're right.
The weakest offensive guard. And you know that although that guard, you know, he'll run off screens, you'll play him on pick and roll, he's not going to be an influencer of the offense. He's not going to be a staple of the offense. These first two games, even though I said that Steph Curry hasn't played that well, but still, Kyrie Irving is giving up a lot of, letting Steph Curry, when he's playing defense, let him get to the lane when he wants to, when he isn't rotating on defense properly.
Looking at our home team, Kyrie Irving would be defending Garrett Temple.
He would be.
I'm wondering if him having to play defense, is that impacting him offensively? First game, he had a good offensive game.
He didn't make a... Will, you want to say something? Go ahead, Will.
No, I was going to say, if they do decide to blow it up, I know exactly who to get rid of and who to bring in to put Cleveland over the top.
My man. You listen to Urban Sports Team, my man, Will T., Ray G's and myself, Wally. For this, you know what? I think Kyrie has been exposed defensively because in game one he was, though. I know in game one he definitely was exposed. Harrison Barnes did whatever he wanted to on him. And they should never put Kyrie Irving on Harrison Barnes, because Harrison Barnes is just going to take him in the block. And Harrison Barnes Kyrie doesn't put any fight in the post. So Harrison Barnes can get a layup anytime he wants to when Kyrie Irving on him. I thought that was a bad decision. You're better off having, to me, in my opinion, you're better off having Kyrie totally on Steph rather than having him on Harrison Barnes, where you're giving up layups rather than Steph, you know, ganking him and then shooting a long three. Granted, Steph shoots the three ball at a high percentage, but it's still between a layup and a three-point shot. I'd rather you take a three-point shot than a layup.
I don't think his biggest problem in this series is defense. I think it's his role in the offense. He needs to handle the ball in order to be, I think, most effective against these Golden State Warriors. And LeBron James is going to handle the ball most of the time. Tyronn Lue also, I believe, probably played a role in his decrease in production in game two. First game, he was 11-12 from the free throw line. That was a big part of his 26 points, because he didn't shoot that well, 7-22 from the field. Second game, he only takes 14 shots. That's eight less shots. Why is that? LeBron James had the ball more, and I don't think Tyronn Lue wanted Kyrie Irving to try to outdo Stephen Curry, which is probably what Kyrie's mindset was. I don't know if Kyrie is thinking all championship or thinking I need to outdo who's being heralded as the league's best player.
I think what Kyrie needs to do is to ball. LeBron needs Kyrie to score and score at a high level. So I think Kyrie taking 14 shots isn't enough. He needs to take more than 14 shots. I believe Kyrie needs to like impose his will, because between LeBron, I'm not even including LeBron, Kyrie Irving is the player on the floor that most of the talent on Golden State cannot check. So you got to utilize that, because you can't put the onus all on LeBron. If you're going to let Kyrie only take 14 shots, then you're going to have to bring back LeBron, who played in last year's series, and say, LeBron, do everything. And that dude got tired. So you have to let Kyrie loose and let him do what he does. Have to.
That means he's going to have to dribble.
Yeah,
quite frequently. He should. Here's the thing, though, that I noticed that's a difference between this series and other series. Kyrie Irving took a lot of uncontested shots throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. Mm-hmm. But everything he shoots in this series, if you watch, is contested for the most part. You know, he has not been the same guy as far as dribbling around guys. Mm-hmm. And that's because the Warriors play excellent help defense.
Well, I can speak for game one. I thought he got to his spots in game one. I thought he got to anywhere he wanted. So he missed a lot of layups to me. I think he missed a lot of layups. And that was on him.
Contested.
Well, no. That was on him. This guy, he can finish a left-hand layup over anybody. And he just missed shots that I've always accustomed to seeing him to make, even contested layups. And I just thought in game one, he wasn't the same Kyrie Irving. Even on his dribble, off his dribble, he got separation off his dribble. He just missed a shot that he would normally make. I think Kyrie needs to step up. Kevin Love needs to step up. I think Kyrie needs to step up to be that dominating player. Not just a good player, but a dominating player.
So, I told you guys I know what needs to happen for Cleveland to win the championship, because they clearly aren't going to win.
we'll talk about that, you know, the prediction part later, though. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say they need to make a trade.
All right. And who do they need to get?
They need to trade Kyrie Irving to the Los Angeles Clippers for Chris Paul and Wesley Johnson.
Wesley Johnson?
Yes.
Chris Paul.
He's
too fragile health wise. I don't think he's built for the 82 game grind plus a playoff, a championship.
That's the thing. If you're able to keep a guy like Mo Williams, right? Because you need a guy who's going to defend on the wing.
Wesley Johnson's like a bum to me now. Well, go ahead. I mean, Syracuse is okay.
He's a strong wing defender. I'm not saying he's a lockdown defender, but in this Cleveland roster, you do not have anyone that can defend on the wing.
Yeah, I'll give you.
And you're not Shumpert,
Amon Shumpert straps,
yes.
To me, he's better than a Wesley
Matthews. Johnson.
I think it's Matthews. Wesley Johnson.
But does J.R. Smith strap? No.
No, but you're going to start. I mean, you're going to start. If anything, I would just start.
Richard Jefferson strap? No.
They only have him for 3-point shots.
Does Mo Williams strap?
He can knock down an open J. They need to play him. Seriously.
As we go through this list of names, Cleveland has some defensive liabilities, including Channing Frye, who.
Does Channing Frye strap? Does Kevin Love strap?
Oh, hell no.
All right, so you need someone that can play defense on the wing.
LeBron
Shumpert is one person. That's one individual.
Matthew Dellavedova.
He lacks foot speed.
He does.
He has grit.
He's like Wojo.
He has grit.
He'll get yanked, but he's going to.
He has grit, but can he defend? Can you put him on someone's one or two top wing players and say, go out there and contest every shot, make every shot contested? No. Wesley Johnson could do that. I'm telling you, man. LeBron, if you're listening, go ahead and make the trade. Yeah. And you don't even have to credit me.
He's
you don't have to credit me.
Maybe Maverick Carter's listening.
Maybe Maverick. Maybe one of those guys. Rich Paul, someone's listening.
They'll make it happen. Trust me. Whatever LeBron wants, they make it happen. So if
don't be surprised if Chris Paul. Don't be surprised if Chris Paul. Chris Paul needs a ring.
There's no way the Clippers will trade him.
Okay. Watch what I'm telling you, man. If it happens, you heard it here first.
What happens in Lob City then?
What happens in Lob City?
You got Kyrie and you got Blake Griffin. It's entertaining. You're not going to win anything, but it'd be entertaining. It'd pack the Staples Center.
All right, man. Well, the series end tomorrow. We'll talk about that after the break.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, because if it's 3-0, it's over. If it's 3-0, it's over. So you get the point? You get it?
I get it.
Thank you. Jeez, man.
Reset the game.
It's the Urban Sports Series.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Well, Henry Cooper's nothing but a tramp. He's a bum. I'm the world's greatest. He must fall in 5 rounds, but if you talk about me, I'll cut it 3. I'll never fight another fella as tough as Doug Jones, not even that big over there, Sonny Lester.
Is he your next fight?
Well, after I annihilate this Henry Cooper, I want that bear.
I'm not going to have
that bear.
What's going to happen to him?
He might be great, but he'll fall in eight. I'm the fittest fighter in the ring today. That's my label.
I'm too fast. Long fight. No special training. Just be at the fight. I'm ready to back up everything I'm saying. And I'm through talking.
The man to beat me, he haven't been born yet. Well, I'll tell Henry Cooper, if he's watching this show, to come to the fight and be ready to fight. Because I'm coming to get you. I'm coming to London to get you. And after I'm through beating him, I think you'll have to join the Beatles and be a singer.
This will be Buster's last stand. Joe Cage is in trouble. Because the Muhammad Ali Joe Cage is going to meet is going to be better than the Muhammad Ali he met 3 years ago.
All people watching this interview, I'm seriously trying to get Joe Frazier and George Foreman in one night. And the gridiron is the greatest fight of all time. Some of them still have doubt. They're making excuses. I want to whip both of these men in one night, and I'll have a record that nobody can touch.
Notice he didn't come to Zaire. He didn't come to Indonesia. He didn't come to Manila. He didn't come to Malaysia. Because he knows he will get in trouble over here in this country because they don't like people like him over here. And all I got to do is get the word and we'll bump him off.
I'm going to do something to Joe Frazier that might be illegal. Our lawyers told me to bring a bail bondsman to get me out of jail. They might put my tail in jail and get me out of jail. After what I do to Joe Frazier.
I don't think that there's no heavyweight alive who couldn't beat me. I know that I'm not alive.
What's gonna happen when you meet Smokey Joe? And I said, Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier. Some people say, you better watch Joe Frazier. He's awful strong. I said, tell him to try a band roll on. That's deodorant.
Yeah, we're back from break. You got to hear Muhammad Ali and all of his nice little flashy clips of some of his catchphrases. It's a blessing, man. Muhammad Ali, RIP, man. RIP world's greatest, man. You will definitely be missed. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene, my boy Ray Jeezy, Will T, and myself, Wally. Call in. The number is 240-478-3140. That's 240-478-3140. Also, like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, just search the Urban Sports Scene. But I mentioned before the break, we're going to preview the game three of the NBA Finals. Right now, again, the Cavs are down to the Golden State Warriors 2-0. Do you expect the Cavs to play better going into Cleveland?
I think they'll play better. Better is a relative word because they got blown out by, 20-something? Game two, on Sunday. 33, I turned it off at a certain point. 33, and then they lost by 15 the first game. So better is a relative word. So, yes, I think they'll – J.R. Smith will definitely shoot the ball better, which he does at home all the time. But this team is just, we got a fight in the Orioles game. Oh, yeah, bench-clearing fight. That's what I'm talking about.
Man, we're talking about game early. But go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Will it be a 33-point loss? No. Will it be a 10-point loss? Probably.
You said 10-point loss?
Yes, 10-point loss.
Oh, so you're expecting 3-0.
I'm expecting 3-0, buddy.
I actually think they'll play better. They'll be more competitive in game three. Don't forget, man, this Golden State Warriors haven't been world beaters on the road. Struggled against the Houston Rockets at times, which didn't really care about playing basketball. The Portland Trailblazers, if it wasn't for Stephen Curry having that special game four, they would be down. They would be tied 2-2 going back to Oakland. And then you have, we saw what happened to Oklahoma, where Oklahoma dominated them in OKC. And then if you look on the flip side, look at Cleveland, the Cleveland Cavaliers, at home, they've been dominant as well. We've seen them look bad against the Toronto Raptors, they didn't look good against Toronto Raptors in Toronto, but when they go back to Cleveland, they're a dominating team, a la like what we've seen what Golden State's doing to Cleveland right now. So to me, when you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers on the flip side, they've been a better home team throughout the whole playoffs, been more of a championship contender at home. If you watch them,
Ray spellbounded by the fight, by the brawl. between the Orioles and the
obviously Orioles Kansas City Royals. Manny Machado's fighting Ventura pitcher for the Kansas City Royals.
What? I just took a break from talking, just like you all do sometimes. I ain't got to call me out, all people.
No one called you out.
No one called you out, bro. You
Ray spellbound or something.
I like just that. Said you spellbound by the fight. You went. You're into like, the.
You're enjoying the fight.
Yeah, that's all.
Nobody not that much fighting the Cavaliers. You know, that's why I'm kind of falling asleep here. But I do think it's gonna be a closer game. But
good segue, right?
I believe Golden State's gonna go up 3-0.
You think they're going 3-0 too? Who would you pick? I mean, obviously, like you said before, we didn't something technical difficulties last time. Who would you pick in the series anyway?
I pick Golden State.
I had Golden State in six.
I picked Cleveland in six. Somewhere.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I did pick Cleveland.
You
six.
Really did. I was going to troll you.
So they were about to win.
You was going to troll me?
They were about to win four straight games.
For me to, yeah, definitely for me to, you know, win.
I mean, don't give up on your pick yet.
I'm not giving
it's
up.
Not, it's no, not you're not. Over. Look, you are.
I'm not giving up. No, not
it's not. It's not over. But the way the first two games have gone, of it's course, over. You know, that's what it looks like.
It's over.
It's not over, son.
It's over.
It's not over, man.
Okay.
It's not over yet.
Keep telling yourself.
Look, man, you know what I do when I pick these games? I've been like 100% accurate.
In spite of the media, though, trolling, in spite of the media kind of trolling LeBron James or whatever, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, for whatever reason, they still feel disrespected. You know what I mean?
Why?
Like Klay Thompson just in a press conference recently said, you know, doubt me. Because people are saying he's not shooting well. He's like, you can basically
sleep on me if you want to. Look at that swag right now.
Right. And then also, another thing is, LeBron James, his kind of, I guess, mindset going in was, I got my guys now. We got this.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't hide that secret. You know, Tyronn Lue said the same thing. So this is still fueling Golden State, even though people are – almost everybody in the media is picking Golden State.
So what does Golden State need to do? Go ahead, Will.
I was going to ask you this. At this point last year, David Blatt had them at a 1-1 tie with a far more inferior team. I think that's true. Is true.
Yeah, definitely.
Tyronn Lue has them down 0-2, heading back home. If this team doesn't get to the level where, you know, it's at least – if they don't go out at least 4-2 to Golden State, I think it was a wash and it's a terrible decision to make to exile David Blatt and bring in Tyronn Lue.
I think it's less about David Blatt. And honestly, I think the experience of being in the finals is playing a huge role or a huge factor this season, because I think Golden State was kind of shell-shocked by the moment last year. I know they played well enough to win the first game, but Kyrie Irving, if he didn't get hurt, you know, many of us think that might have been different outcome. This year, they know what to expect, and they faced adversity in the playoffs too. So it's experience. Cleveland coasted through the Eastern Conference, and I think they're shell-shocked now and trying to figure out how to regroup. And their leader never can hide his emotions. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. Clearly, he's hurting right now. And Golden State, they're capitalizing.
That's a good question. I think, I mean, I agree with you. I think I know you're going with it, Will T. I think that if Lou, you know, gets swept or whatever, you know, he gets swept. Obviously, you know, they made the wrong decision. You saw what Black did.
I mean, looking at it in a vacuum.
Because it's the same Golden State Warriors team. Nothing has pretty much changed. Cleveland is a different team. There's more talent on this team. And a team with grit with Dellavedova as your starting point guard. Tristan Thompson, who had to be, you know, played log major minutes. You had Mozgov play a lot of minutes. Those guys played and contributed, and they pushed Golden State to six games. And this team looks dominated within two games. And that's simplified this way: the first two games in Golden State of last year, they competed in both games, had an opportunity pretty much to go up 2-0 going into Cleveland. Now on this year in 2016. They've looked bad in the first two games in Golden State. So if you look at it that way, Black had those boys going early.
Yeah.
And Tyronn Lue, for whatever reason it is, maybe taking his talent for granted, has not. So I agree with you. I totally agree with you that if they do get ousted out the finals in disrespectful fashion, that Black, they made the wrong decision. Especially like again for this season, they made the wrong decision. Looking at it that way, but the Warriors, what do the Warriors need to do to go up 3-0?
Weather the storm. You know the crowd's going to be raucous in Cleveland, and the Cavs are going to play much harder at home. Probably going to feel more comfortable shooting the ball from the perimeter. You know, you have to weather the storm. If you can inflict doubt within the mind of the Cavs, we just talked about Muhammad Ali, the great mind games he played with his opponent, then I think that's the key. You have the talent. You have a better team, clearly. All you have to do now is match their energy and counter their runs. That's it. That's the key. I don't think the cue is Cameron Indoor by any stretch of the imagination, where somehow bad teams still beat good teams. But, you know, still, again, it's going to be a crazy environment, and they're going to be pulling for their guys because this is it. This is do or die. You know, if you go down 3-0, you know the history.
Yeah, I think that the Cavs bench needs to stay consistent. You're gonna have to have players like you're gonna have that Draymond Green play the same way. He dropped 28 on Sunday. He's gonna have to have an effective game. Golden State's bench has to continue to play the same way. Draymond Green has to continue to hit open shots. If they can get that, and to me on the road, you need your superstars to be your superstars. So Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, they can't have the games they had in Oakland. They got to play to their levels. I mean, to their level in Cleveland for their team to go up 3-0.
Andre Iguodala has to continue to be effective. He can't be in foul trouble. I think that's huge. But the great thing about Steph Curry is he feeds off of the road crowd.
He does.
So I mean, going in, he's prepared. He's not worried at all. And I think the more that they actually heckle him, mm-hmm. the harder he's going to play. And I mean, we've seen what he does in Portland, mm-hmm. in OKC. He's a scary dude when he gets going, of course.
I totally agree.
Even though your boy Magic just came out and said something.
Yeah, I heard about it.
Wow, today.
No, he's right, though. Showtime Lakers will beat the Golden State Warriors.
Please.
Yes, he can. But that's a whole different topic, though. But he's right, though. Does LeBron James need to make more, make more of an effort like he did last year's finals when he did most of the work? Does he need to have that type of thought process for this team to tie the series 2-2?
I mean, unfortunately, he is. The reality is, you didn't. If you're him coming into these finals, you thought, I don't have to do as much, right? You know, last year everything had to run through him, right? Uh-huh. He was the only way that guys were going to get open because they were going to double him, and he was going to find the open man. This year, he figured, okay, well, if they do double me, then I have Kevin Love to knock down threes in the corner. Kyrie can break guys down off the dribble. So you have to respect and space. You can space the floor and, not have to worry about the double coming from any and everywhere. But the reality is, in order for this team to get back into the series, he's going to have to carry. He's going to have like a triple double, like 40, 10, and 12.
Clearly, he's capable, especially if he plays angry, because it's eating him up inside. This is what the 7th straight loss to the Warriors for him,
uh-huh.
Including the regular season, dating back to last year's finals. So he's frustrated. So if he plays angry, he's definitely capable. But I think Golden State as a team has played better team defense that has prevented him from just going off like that. They switch well. It was one play early on in game 2 where LeBron James beat his man, and Andrew Bogut gets a clean block on him.
Uh-huh.
If you continue to play that type of defense – Steve Kerr's doing an amazing job. I think Mark Jackson hates on him, and I think people don't recognize this while we're watching the game. They don't recognize.
You really think so?
I don't think he hates on him.
I think Mark Jackson.
Warriors. I do on the slide. I think it's what do you call it? Subliminal. It is. Sometimes he'll criticize the Warriors out of nowhere for no reason.
He'll have like flashbacks or something like that.
You never see Breen or Van Gundy kind of feeding into it. Like, keep it moving.
Steph shoots a three. I'm supposed to be coaching Steph. That's my point guard.
Wouldn't you feel like that?
To be honest with you, I think that Mark Jackson, for the most part, now I can't say that
objective.
No, I'll say he's done a good job of hiding it and keeping him and removing himself from making himself the story where saying, you know, when I was there or we used to do this. Now, there are times, I agree with you, where you definitely can feel the tension that he has towards the organization. It's not towards the players, but towards the organization for how everything was handled. And he feels as if he should be the one that's on the stage, on the big stage with this team winning a championship. But the reality is you had the opportunity. You didn't do it.
Sorry. Didn't happen.
Well, the thing is, though, he developed these guys. And I think you kind of see the same thing around the league at times, especially with the case of OKC this past year. But I should have pulled Stepien's and wrote down that exact moment I was talking about when I thought he was hating. Because I can't really pinpoint it right now. But I'll text you guys and we'll roll with it moving forward. If it becomes relevant moving in the next game.
It doesn't even matter. If LeBron James gets dominated in the series, like, you know, it looks like it's going to continue to be, what does that do to his legacy?
Nothing. Right now, the media is going to take he's going to take his beating in the media, but anytime you go to six straight finals, your legacy is cemented. That doesn't happen. That's once in a generational type of guy, you know. Doesn't happen at all.
No, the media and I think the casual fan will beat him up, and the haters of LeBron will beat him up. But I think the people who are totally objective realize that for someone to go to six straight finals is something special. Then not only that, in one of those finals, you lose two guys that are all-stars that were considered to be the reason that helped you get to where you are and made that a very competitive series against one of the all-time better teams.
Yeah.
Even though I think, you know, when Golden State wins this championship, they'll be the greatest team, NBA team of all time. But last year's team wasn't a fluke. They won 67 games.
Exactly. You said it right there. And basically, Jerry West said it best. Jerry West said that, what do you expect from LeBron James? The dude went to six straight. He went to six straight finals. And most of the finals he did lose to, the record when he lost, what is he, 2-5, what is he in the finals? 2-5 in the finals, right? He's 2-5 in the finals.
No, 2-4, sorry.
It's 2-4. Yeah, it could be 2-5. Yeah, 2-4 in the finals.
It's about to be 2-5.
It's 6-3. No, it's 2-4. No, he lost.
It's 2-5.
He's 2-5. He lost that game. He lost against the Spurs in Cleveland.
That first Spurs twice. Dallas, that's 3, right?
Yeah, Dallas is 3.
Golden State, 2.
Golden State.
And who else?
And then...
No, Ray's right.
Okay.
Ray's right, because you thank Spurs you. Twice.
Say it again. Something with this daggone thing so we can remix it. Ray's right.
All right, but anyway, for most of his finals appearances, his team wasn't even favorite for most of them. And a lot of the great players that we referred to as being excellent or whatever, like Kobe Bryant, all of his championships, he was favorite. All of them.
But how are we comparing him to Kobe?
No, I'm just saying in general, people bash LeBron James, but you have to understand, like, not most of the times he's taking the team.
This would be a seventh final.
This is a seventh final. Yeah. So if he loses, he'll be 2-5.
Yeah, he loses. I'm saying.
Still trying to argue.
He's trying to add the loss early. He's trying to add.
No, I'm just making
you
sure.
You
heard
change of voice? Yeah. Muhammad Ali, he's a great philanthropist. He was using this.
Crazy. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that LeBron he's carried his team to the well, not carried his team, but he's brought in a lesser team compared to his opponents and lost games. That Spurs team that when he was at the Cavs,
the first time
should have beat him. The Spurs team he lost to, was a great team.
It's only really been two finals when he hasn't been favored.
Exactly.
That's it.
I know. He has because Dallas is the only one I felt like he shamed himself.
Against Dallas.
Yeah, he shamed himself.
They should have won that championship.
Yeah, they won. Yeah,
and I believe the first one against the Spurs they were favorites, and the second one for that.
No, the second one they weren't favorite. The first one they were favorite. Spurs had home court advantage. They're favorite the first one though.
And LeBron actually went out with cramps that first game against the Spurs in that series, but then the second game he came out and had a monster game, and basically gave Miami home court, but. They end up getting me beat 4-1, four straight games. I mean, four straight after that.
So I'm just saying, like, but no, most of the only game he, like you said, two that he was actually favored to. But you know, it is what it is. But I feel like he gets a bum rap, and when we speak of some of the other all-time greats, Jordan favoring all of his championships,
I'll be honest. So. I would like to see LeBron James go to the Lakers and have to get through the Western Conference.
I think
with
he can
a
do
team
it. Sure, he
should. To
sure
the do championship.
Everybody, but this is my thing. Everybody knocks him for being in the Eastern Conference and doing it. But there are so many. There are great individual players in the Eastern Conference. They can't do it. They can't get to the finals. Like Paul George to me is a dog, and he's not getting to Eastern Conference.
That's not a great comparison.
No, Dwayne Wade for whatever it takes. Dwayne Wade doesn't get Carmelo Anthony. I like Carmelo. He's doesn't even taste a championship.
Dwayne Wade got a championship before LeBron did.
I'm just saying though, like on a consistent level, we're talking about on a consistent level. This dude flipped. He switched teams.
Eastern Conference, yeah, sure. He switched. Well, he's that good though.
That's what I'm
nobody's
saying.
Nobody's questioning how good he is.
But I don't think you
the
could.
The thing is though, I don't think he would walk through the Western Conference like he's okay. The Eastern Conference.
Well, let me.
And I think he would got eliminated just like he did to Dwight Howard's the Orlando Magic years ago with Cleveland, because when you face a good balanced team such as the Warriors,
but that's,
like, imagine if he had faced the Warriors in the second or third round.
Yeah.
There, what would happen? Look what's happening now.
But my thing, you talk about Dwight Howard. You mentioned that team back then. He's still LeBron is still carrying. He had to carry the load. That's a dude who has to carry the
that's
load.
What you're supposed to do.
No, there are players. That, come on now, like a lot of these people, a lot of these champions, their Robins are awesome players. They're not like Antoine Jameson, who's done. Like you can't. No, I don't know. LeBron James deserves so much credit for getting his teams to the championship.
I never disputed. I just said I think in the West he would not have gone.
No, he'll struggle. No, he wouldn't. I agree with that.
He lost on multiple occasions.
I think in the West he would. I still think depending on the team he's with, he can get there as many times as he wants. It depends. It depends on the team. Put it that way.
Man, but to speak to what you just said about Robins. That means Kyrie Irving is not a good Robin.
He's not a good Robin.
And then,
because he don't do both.
But I knew Kevin Love wasn't going to be a good Robin.
Kevin Love is exposed.
Kevin Love is not Batman either, by the way. He was on a bad team, and he just stood out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So real quick about Steph Curry. If Steph Curry, last year he wasn't Finals MVP, this season isn't like he's going to be the Finals MVP if they win. If he doesn't get Finals
it's
MVP,
Draymond Green,
right,
it's
add to his, I would hate
it's
that.
It's going to add to his resume of unbelievable
I would
NBA
so
player.
Hate that. You have no idea.
I said last week on the show, nobody heard, that I feel like OKC lost.
I said on the show last week, nobody heard.
I feel like OKC lost because they gave Draymond Green too much respect. Tyronn Lue took that approach. And they got burned, but I don't think he can
only,
do that every
only
game.
Only in game two, he ain't gonna do it again.
Well, you said earlier in the show he could though.
He's not gonna do it again. I said
the man was second in the league. I just felt like you do some time when he was shooting bad during the OKC series. Sucks. I think they should just they should left him by himself.
Yeah, he sucks. I don't care. 28 points, he can slice it all they want to.
Want to say that. Golden State is a magical team. Bottom line.
They are.
As I watch Andre Iguodala struggle from the free throw line, shoot air ball three sometimes, but he hits three free throws at the end of the Oklahoma City game when Steph Curry hit that long three. He knocked down all three, nothing but net.
They're a magical team. But if Steph doesn't get Finals MVP, does that hinder his, like, not legacy, but his image in terms of being like
heck
that dude.
No, heck no.
Do you think a superstar
is
supposed to get at least one NBA
finals? Scrawny dude. He is always exceeding expectations. Even if he loses, he's a media darling. The dude, you can't argue with him. We thought he was most valuable back when LeBron was still winning those rewards.
That's true. Anyway,
all awards.
And with Deshaun Jackson's Washington Redskins wide receiver, Deshaun Jackson is finally at OTAs. What does this mean for the Redskins? We'll discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Saints.
The agency.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hello, how are you? It's so typical of me to talk about myself. So I hope that you're well. And did you ever make it out of that town? Nothing ever happened. It's no secret that the both of us are running out of time. Say hello from the other side. Seems to
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wally, Will T, and Ray Jeezy. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just search Urban Sports Scene. Call in the four lines. The phone line, excuse me. I got to stop saying that. The phone line is open. The number is 240-478-3140. No one can hear you. That's why you mic down. You can make your little cosign and art, little comments now. Nah, they can't hear you.
Am I on now?
No, you're not. Because I got you on the mute
okay,
side.
Okay, around the horn, baby.
You're right.
Auditioning for around the horn.
You're on now, man.
Muting me.
Muted.
I'm talking about Tony muted. Reality. Tony Reality. That's reality.
Also check.
Our four lines.
Go ahead. Also check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com.
Ladies love a man with an accent.
Hey, so, shut up. Let me do this read.
Don't hide.
Let me do this read, dude. Dang.
I have four lines open.
Oh man, we do NBA picks with these individuals, NBA playoff picks with these individuals. So make sure you check out their podcast. Anyway, I mentioned DeSean Jackson before the break. Ray Jeezy making fun of my accent. I don't even have an accent. You making fun of my accent. I'm born here. You making fun of my accent. That's a darn shame. DeSean Jackson finally made it to OTAs after missing the first 2 weeks of it. Is it a big deal?
Absolutely not. Well, no, I'll say that there's a part of the fan base that thinks because he didn't partake in OTAs last year, that's the reason why he had the hamstring injury so soon to in the beginning of the season. I don't know how true that is, any validity to that. So I'm going to say it's not a big deal because it's A, voluntary, and B, you know, I'm pretty sure after 16 weeks, he's built up that camaraderie with Kirk Cousins. They've got enough work in, so they have a system, a bond, a way of communicating on the field that works for them. So I'm saying it's not a big deal.
I don't think it's a big deal, but I do think it shows that to me the Redskins are building something and to make him even come to an OTA. I feel that. Especially,
you have to look at, like, the man had a workout bonus of $500,000.
That too?
And he still didn't show up at OTAs.
Yeah, I know.
That just lets you know that he really didn't want
to
be here.
Yeah, but obviously he decided to come. Period. He decided to come. Still voluntary, so he decided to come.
Yeah, so he decided to come.
I think that because of you guys, I feel like having a young – he's hurt. You have the young kid, Josh Dotson, the rookie out of TCU, who's getting rave reviews right now as we speak. Pierre Garçon and the wide receiving corps being highly touted from certain scouts and whatnot. You have it forces him to come into OTAs to get some rapport with some of the wide receivers, and also to check out Josh Dotson and whatnot and see what he can do on the field in OTAs. I think it's a contract year and he's motivated. I feel like this could be a big year for DeSean Jackson. Because, there's going to be a lot of people. There have been a lot of people that tried to run him out of D.C. So I think this fuels the fire for DeSean Jackson. I think he'll work hard enough in the in training camp, upcoming training camp and OTAs. I feel like he's going to do what he needs to do and work more with Kirk Cousins in OTAs to make that chemistry a little bit better. But Ray, you chilling? Still chilling, Ray?
Ray chilling.
Ray chilling like a mug, man. You know what I'm saying? What does this mean for the Washington Redskins? You good, Ray? Go ahead, you.
No, what is having DeSean Jackson back?
Yeah, what does that mean for the Redskins?
It starts to build the camaraderie, for that wide receiver group. Another some more opportunity for him and Kirk Cousins to get on, to get on the same page. Go ahead.
His team,
the dead has risen.
Is team camaraderie a bit overrated, especially in Washington? You heard whatever his name is, Ricky Jean, Francois, we're like, just because a man don't talk to somebody, it's like, really?
I don't think I'd be best friends, but I do think you
football,
need
football. He needs to have, a connection with his quarterback.
Yeah, he needs to have a connection with his quarterback.
Other than that, I don't think his presence is really that big of a deal.
I mean, there's some people who say he's a one trick pony, so only thing he has to do is know how to go deep.
Run.
Well,
no,
that's all.
No, to me, I think it's a good. I think it means a lot for the Redskins. Only in this facet,
it lets the Redskins know that this is an organization. It lets the Redskins know that now this is an organization that, you know, people want to come and people want to attend OTAs and whatnot. You got Josh Norman, DeSean Jackson now attending OTAs where his pattern is not to. So it shows now that this organization is trying to build something, and the players are taking a liking towards it, and they're appreciating what the Redskins are trying to build. So in my opinion, for the Redskins, the image of the Washington Redskins, DeSean Jackson coming to OTAs represents the change of the guard of, you know, how this team is being viewed by, you know, NFL players. So
changing of the guard.
Yeah, huh? Exactly, man. See how I put that out there? Okay. Changing the guard, man.
Which means we're looking at a big contract extension for the head coach.
It could. That's possibly. Definitely. If he has this team win the NFC East again,
great
football, definitely.
Great football team.
Great football team, yeah. So does this mean, I mean, Will T glossed over it a little bit. So what does this mean for Kirk Cousins? Of anything?
I don't think it really means a whole lot. It just means, you know, you get some more reps with DeSean Jackson. It, you know, just allows this team to have their depth on display. You know, you add Josh Doctson. Mm-hmm. Then also, I think something that people are discounting is Nyles Paul. You know, he was out all of last year, mm-hmm. you know, so he had the whole year off. He's getting healthy. Then you add Vernon Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this makes this receiving core one of the deeper receiving cores in the league. So it should be interesting to see, you know, how that pans out, you know, coming for 16 weeks during the NFL season.
Oh, I agree. I think I agree. I mean, I don't think it's the biggest thing in the world, but I think it's good to have all your wide receivers there at camp, being able to work with them and just, you know, just to see how they all, you know, work together and whatnot. So in my opinion, it's a good thing. It's not something that's like necessary. It's not like he had to be at OTAs, but for Kirk Cousins, I think it's, you know, there is a positive to it. Do you think DeSean Jackson is going to have a motivated year this season?
If it's a contract year, then yeah, he definitely should be motivated. Mm-hmm. You know, DeSean Jackson's what, 29, 30?
Yeah.
So he, you know, by NFL standards, he's getting older. You know, he isn't the most physically imposing receivers. He's a guy who uses speed. So you need to he needs to go out and show the, you know, not only Washington, but show the NFL that he still has speed and he can still contribute and make plays consistently. So yeah, it's going to be and also the added competition with Josh Doctson, a guy who has a similar skill set but is bigger. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he shows up and he does on every Sunday.
No, I'm with you. And he's 29. DeSean's 29, so he hasn't hit 30 yet, so he's close enough to get to, you know, I feel like that last real contract.
He got one more lick
at him. Yeah, exactly.
One more lick.
You already know it. So I feel that DeSean Jackson will be motivated. I think it'll be a big year for him. Somebody's going to pay for him if it's not the Washington Redskins. He's going to get top dollar somewhere else because, again, that one thing he does well and going deep. Not a lot of players in the NFL can do it the way he does it, as electric as he does it. So anyway, it's about time to close this show out. But before we close this show out, any parting shots, any comments about Muhammad Ali?
I think I stated everything I need to state. One, you know, the world really lost a great one. You know, he was great not only inside but outside of the ring. And it's very rare that you find someone that's, you know, revered is for what they do, especially in sports or celebrity, you know, within their arena and also outside of it. So, you know, rest in peace, Muhammad Ali. Be dearly missed.
I second that. Sad that Manny Machado had to get in a fight to make Sports Center. Pay attention.
I'm a Will T, man. It was a sad day over the weekend, but people won't forget. That's the blessing about YouTube and all these other social internet outlets where we can kind of see Muhammad Ali anytime we wanted to, and hear what he said back then, and seen some of his fights in the past. He's a guy who impacted society, impacted the sports world, and is a role model for many athletes in the past, present, and future. So RIP and Muhammad Ali, you will be missed. It's a great show. Always a blessing to do the show with my homies. Hopefully we get to do it next week again. Last week there was an issue, like Ray Jeezy mentioned. We had a lot of good things to talk about. We got to talk about it tonight. So again, keep listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Anything else? Am I missing anything? All right, man, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Megalita's out, homie.
picture when you see me. Pledge allegiance to the swag. 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 Pledge allegiance to the swag.